Hi, and welcome to A Wee Blether About, a podcast from the Academic Skills team at UWS. My name is John Watson, and I am one of the Academic Skills Advisors at the University. Today, we're going to have a chat about artificial intelligence and whether you can use it to help develop your academic skills at university. This is a topic we've had a few requests about, but it was one we wanted to be sure about in terms of our information before we discussed it. Now, as you can tell, our usual host, Linda, is not with us today. She'll be back for the next podcast episode, so I'll try and hold the fort for today. However, we do have a special guest with us, somebody who's very familiar to the podcast, Dr. Kevin Wilson from the Learning Transformation Team at UWS. If you listen back to when we started the podcast in 2021, you will hear his dulcet tones as he was an academic skills advisor at that time. I think in podcast terms, they call us a friend of the show. Welcome back to the podcast, Kevin.
Thanks, John, and thanks for having me. Absolute honour to be invited onto the podcast as a guest. I feel like I've finally made it, so thank you.
Good full circle now.
Full circle, yeah. That's it.
More recently, Kevin has been working on the guidance about AI for staff at the university. So we're really pleased to have him along today to explain a bit more about the university's approach to AI. I'm also joined by Carly. Hi, Carly.
Hi, John.
And Mary. Hi, Mary.
Hello.
Hello. And they're here to chat about this topic, and hopefully by the end of it, listeners will be a bit clearer about when and how AI fits into assignment work. So let's begin with a simple question. Might not have a simple answer, but Kevin, what is AI and why has it become such an important topic in education in the last couple of years?
Okay, well, I mean, it's important to start here with a disclaimer, which is that I am not a computer scientist, so my understanding of this kind of technical workings of these things is rudimentary at absolute best. But I think one of the things, an important distinction to make initially here is between AI that might have been used in the past, or types of AI people might have used without even knowing it, spell checkers that are built into your word processors, grammar checkers. These are forms of artificial intelligence that have been around for a while and that people have been using and rely on and actually sometimes use without even knowing it. What we're talking about and the big change that has kind of impacted on education and on all industries and sectors is generative AI. Generative AI is Or another name for it are these kind of large language models. Now, again, this is where my rudimentary understanding comes in. So, if there's anybody listening who knows this better than me, and I've said something wrong, I apologise. But the idea is that these models are trained on huge amounts of data and all forms of kind of written words. So, there's like, you know, news, things from the news, books, journals, blog posts, basically everything in any type of written form on the internet. They can also be other ones that are trained on images. Through this, they develop a kind of machine learning, which they then use to answer questions and to generate output. So the based on what they've, all the data they've taken in, there's a lot of complicated stuff there that I can't get my head around, no matter how much I read about it. But they're able to then generate responses. Now, the key thing, and I think this is what it comes down to around issues of assessment and academic integrity, is that the responses that are generated aren't copied and pasted from somewhere else, right? They're not taking chunks of material from elsewhere on the internet and repeating it to you in their answer. What essentially what they're creating is a new output, something which didn't exist before. Now, it's based on their learning of all that I say there, the machine learning of all everything that's come before it on all this masses of data, which is, you know, kind of beyond comprehension, the amount of stuff that gets put into them. But the output is new, and this is what creates this kind of new situation and new kind of complexity for particularly around assessment in higher education, because we're moving away from issues around plagiarism, whereby, you know, we all know the definition of plagiarism here, but whereby we're passing somebody else's work off as our own, and we have the system of Turnitin, which can identify this to some extent quite easily, right? You know, we can see when chunks of text have been matched to somewhere else, and Turnitin can tell us that that's somebody's using this without a reference or without acknowledgement. We don't have this anymore now with generative AI. So whatever's been work's been generated is potentially not the student's own, but it's not the same as plagiarism because it's not been taken from elsewhere. So we're now in this kind of new situation and where everything's needing to change and to kind of to come up to speed with these advancements.
Yeah. So, Colin, Mary, have you been seeing any students in appointments that have been asking about this? And maybe you could give some examples of some of the kind of products that students are using in terms of AI.
Yeah, I've had lots of student questions about AI, and I think because it's at this stage feeling a bit more ubiquitous, you know, there's lots of questions surrounding it and if it's appropriate to use, but lots of questions have been surrounding on maybe how students can use it to get ideas for their assessments, if that's appropriate. I think students seem to be wanting to use it in the right way if it is allowed for an assessment, which we'll get into in a few minutes with the guidelines and the policies surrounding it at UWS. But I've had mostly lots of questions. Usually it's more in appointments, you know, looking at students' work more specifically that they've drafted and that they've started to write. But now students are really wanting to know if this is an appropriate tool to use, how they might be able to use it ethically, and how, you know, and if this is the way forward in a sense with assessments, how is this affecting the assessment process and our critical process even more so.
And Mary, have you been seeing any students in appointments about this?
Yeah, I have, probably similar to Carly as well. And actually speaking on that last point about kind of being critical with it, it's probably where some issues have come up. And that's maybe going to lead on to our next point a little bit as well. But some issues when students have kind of seen whatever AI produces as a right thing to use or the true answer or just simply something that they can trust because it came from online and they assume that whatever sources AI has are trustworthy. And that's just not always necessarily true, especially as Kevin says, it's being based on anything that's ever been written, which we know not everything that's ever been written is wonderful and should be used in our assignments. So a couple of examples that I've seen are students who are maybe just popping in and not thinking about whether they need to question it, whether they need to adapt it and things like that.
Yeah. And so it's been in the news recently, hasn't it? I mean, we're talking here about kind of products like ChatGPT, Copilot, and I think only the other week there was news about DeepSeek from China as well. And it's quite a learning curve for us, really. I mean, in some ways, a lot of the students seem to know more about this than we do, or some of the students do anyway. So it's quite difficult for us to keep up. Have you been finding that, Kevin, as well, when you've been coming up with the guidance? It's been quite a big learning curve for yourself.
Oh, 100%, yeah. And I mean, it just keeps changing, you know, keeps developing. I mean, somebody showed me just the other day something called Google Notebook LM, which I hadn't heard about before, and which was, you know, and it blew my mind as to what that could do. And it's not even just seeing different things that you know, a tool that you've already seen can do. It's finding completely new tools that are there, apparently even just coming out recently or that have been around for a while that can do things that you weren't aware of.
That's the one where you can produce a podcast, isn't it?
Yeah, and actually, yeah. You know, you can ask it to do a podcast for a research paper for you. So it's two kind of computer. I mean, that was one of the things I saw it do. Two kind of computer generated voices talking about a research paper, but in a very kind of human way. You know, much like we're talking here. I mean, that's part of it. You know, and who wants to listen to a kind of robo voice reading a research article? You know, I think that's the part of the kind of potential appeal to it, that it's summarizing it in a way which sounds human and which is much more engaging to listen to. I think that, and we'll probably get into this, one of the frustrations that probably people are feeling, it's just this, because the rate of change is so rapid, it's out there, students are using it, but unfortunately universities don't change as rapidly, and we have all these institutional processes and training, and people are, you know, have other priorities within what they do. And it's such a big, you know, as a priority for people, but there's all these other things. The issue is that the processes and the systems and the training and the guidance within an institution as big as a university is always going to lag behind something like this. But when you've got something which is moving so quickly, it just seems like sometimes as if it's everything's really out of touch. So I think there's going to be a period, we're in a difficult period just now, right, which is institutions trying to catch up with us, something that's changed so rapidly. It will continue to change. the response is lagging behind, frankly, for everybody. You know, some institutions are further ahead, but nobody is ahead of the AI, frankly, right? So it's just about, you know, I suppose understanding that. And I think when we get into some of the stuff later on, we'll think about what students can do now in this maybe more kind of difficult, uncertain area, and what they can think about. It's going to be about, you know, just understanding academic integrity and things like that. But yeah, certainly it's been something that we've, you know, that's been a constant challenge. And just for me to try and come up or to see what you can say to other people, I need to try and understand it. And it's, you know, it's not always easy to understand. And it's also the implications for it once it's out in practice. You know, things will start to change. You know, other unis are putting out their guidance, but the guidance is then changing based on what's happened with students and what the feedback people are getting back. So it's all fluid in that respect as well.
Yeah. So what is the current UWS approach then to Gen AI?
So in terms of, I was involved in the kind of, there'll be more stuff to come, more training for staff and more kind of more detailed kind of guidance for staff, which, you know, it's staff are priority. Staff, I'm a staff facing role, but in order for us to ensure that students are getting the right guidance on it, I suppose we need to get staff in a position where they can guide students as well, and they know the position. So I suppose the best way to think of it is there's a standard position within the university regulation, so that essentially sits above everything. And I've got the regulation here. This is from chapter 5 of the Code of Disciplines for Students and the UWS Regulatory Framework, and this is around academic misconduct. It says, it basically gives you a list of all the different forms of academic misconduct, but the bullet point that's relevant to this discussion is around generative AI. It says, academic misconduct is any type of cheating in any assessment to obtain an unfair advantage, for example, and then it says, submission of material generated by artificial intelligence where such material has not been specifically deemed appropriate for that assessment item. So the kind of default position is, for any assessment, unless it tells you otherwise, you should not be generating material, so taking big bits of text from AI and putting them in your assessment and passing them off as your own, right? That now, there's going to be a lot of kind of, we'll get into the kind of sub-details, which is more interesting and positive and constructive discussions come from. I mean, I suppose once we, you know, you wouldn't want to be doing that anyway, I would hope. I mean, who would want to just defer to the machine learning for their output, right? You know, there's something there. But I think going back to what I said, just if I'll repeat it then, it said, so essentially academic misconduct is the submission of material generated by artificial intelligence where such material has not been specifically deemed appropriate for that assessment item. So that second part of the sentence is probably where the most interesting discussions and it actually expands out into a lot of different possibilities, which is that aside from that default position, there's a scope for different assessments to encourage different types of engagement and interacting with generative AI based on that assessment item and what the assessors, that's the lecturers, deem to be appropriate for the assessment. So yes, we don't want people just taking big chunks of text from AI and try to pass it off as their own, but there's going to be, hopefully as we go forward, a lot more advancements in how students can and use it in conjunction with us doing their work for assessments. And we're going to try and encourage staff to think about essentially kind of categorising assessments in different ways, so that, you know, you might have one category assessment where they deem it you don't use AI in any way for this assessment, right? Then you have another category where it's specified the ways in which a student might use AI with the assessment. Then we have another category whereby AI can be used in any way for the assessment if they wish to do so, but the assessment can be completed without it. And then a final category whereby the use of AI is actually part of the assessment. So it's embedded within the assessment. So you have to use it. So that might be one where we're generating a different responses with AI and critiquing them as part of the assessment. The first approach, you shouldn't use it in any way. I suspect, you know, we'll be moving away from that entirely, you know, as we go on. And what we want, the guidance that we've been trying to give to staff is that, to think about what you can do ahead of the assessment. So what it's about is, how can I design the assessment in a way which limits the scope for potential kind of misuse or collusion with AI. What guidance can I give to make it really clear to students how they might use AI in a constructive, appropriate way, and also to be really clear about what academic integrity is and why we should practice it? If we can really focus on all these things ahead as part of the assessment process, what it should do is limit students' kind of inclination to misuse it, and also the opportunity. If assessment is designed in a certain way whereby the assessor can be much more certain that they're assessing the student and not an AI tool, then it actually means that the assessor can be actually more assured that, you know, you can use it any way you want. I know that what you're going to produce is still going to be your learning. So that's kind of where we are just now. I think that this is reasonably new guidance, and this is where the lag comes in. The assessments just now are not really, you know, some people are doing really interesting stuff with this, and I'd be happy to talk about some examples of that. Other assessments at this stage just are going to hopefully get changed in the coming months, and we're at a stage now in the university where what's called the kind of module amendment process. Unfortunately, again, this comes down to the kind of institutional thing where you can't just say, right, well, I'm going to change my assessment to this week. I decided to do something else, right? I had it in the module descriptor that you were all doing an essay, but we're all going to do something really exciting and interesting. If the module descriptor says it's a 2,000-word essay, by what the quality assurance standards say, that's what the students have to get. So in order to change the assessment, it has to go through a big process whereby it will be probably in this time next year, which you would be getting your exciting new AI kind of innovative assessment. So this is kind of where we are just now, and this is why this is what I was talking about with the kind of lag between the, you know, what the technology can do, potentially what students are doing, and actually what some of the assessments are doing as well.
Yeah, and that's why we've waited so long to produce this podcast to get
completely
things
understand
going.
Why.
Yeah. So, Carly, Mary, just to bring you back in, have you got any advice that you've kind of found useful from experience?
I think one of the things to highlight to students as well, and Kevin's mentioned this in most of the potential tiers, that AI could be used, but if AI is ever required, you'll be very aware of that. And at this point, you can experiment with AI in various ways if you want to, but we do have to stress, nobody's forcing you right now to use AI. So if you are like really worried, I've seen some students who are just quite scared of it, I think. I'd like to, you know, put that out there as well, that nobody is requiring you to become an expert in this. And I'm sure you've heard through our conversation right now that there's very few AI experts. But you're right, it's been kind of a hot topic in various ways. Different spaces. I think in our role as kind of academic skills advisors, it's really about how can it support maybe your learning process more than your output, because a lot of the guidance is about what you submit, whereas what we talk about is maybe how it could help you learning. And I'm not sure if Carly would like to speak more on that, or if Kevin wants to come in now.
Just in terms of, I think that's an excellent point, is that, you know, if students are worried about if they should be using it, you know, really broadly speaking, I think we should think about going forward, there'll be two types of categories of, you know, one of assessment. There'll be assessments where you might be able to use AI in some ways to support the assessment if you're doing it, if you want, or you can complete it without it. And then there'll be assessments whereby you will be asked to use AI as part of it. And as you said exactly right there, Mary, you'll know fine well. So if it doesn't say it's part of it and you don't want to use AI, then you don't have to, right? And you know, there's lots of, you know, when we talk about use as well, there's a wide spectrum of use, right? And I suppose we need to think about, you know, we should know, if we understand academic integrity and what that means, we should know what inappropriate use means. It's try to pass off the work of the AI output as your own. But I mean, I think even now you've got to say, well, if I'm not sure about a term, right, and I wanted to ask a generative AI tool to clarify it for me, it clarified it for me, and then I used that, you know, knowledge to go and do some research. I've used the tool, right, but it's not in an inappropriate way, you know. So there's ways that we can use it even now if we want to, right? Very rarely, I think, within assessments is it going to be a requirement, and I think there's going to be an onus on students to understand where the line is with kind of and maintaining integrity of assessment and ensuring that they're learning properly. Sorry, I'm rambling on here. This is just, once I get going with this stuff, it just keeps coming out. So I'll let Carly talk for a bit.
No, I absolutely agree with what you're saying. And I think we can ramble on about this because even though it's taken us some time to really intentionally produce policy on it, it's something that we've been discussing for years. We're certainly really aware of it and have talked about it with other institutions, other professionals outside of UWS, and that's led to some really good insights, and it's informed, I think, our policy and to some degree as well. But I think you're saying about using it to clarify, and that's what I tell students. I always say, if we're going to use it, if you're allowed to use it, it needs to be clear, like clarity versus communication or creation of your content. So clarity versus creation is probably what we want to gear towards for the most part, unless, again, your assessment requires you for some reason to create something and then actually put that into your assessment. But that will be very, very clear to you if that is some sort of requirement. So, lots of students will come to us and it will be their first essay at university. And they're thinking, I have no idea how to start with this guidance that I have, and now I have this blank Word document staring back at me and I don't know how to create a structure. So that's a really good time to use your guidance to maybe put that into ChatGPT or something and say, how would I structure a 1500 word essay? How would my paragraphs look like in order? And that could be something that you are still critical of because maybe they do something that doesn't look logical. So mm-hmm. We still need to be critical of small things like that that you might be using it for to kind of guide you, and it's guiding you in your creation of content and in your skills development. So if you are not sure if you're using it correctly, you can also still come to us in an appointment and we can help you out with that to see if it's an appropriate use. And that's a skill that you'll develop as well and how to use it correctly.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Just to kind of reiterate what you kind of made the point, just as I put my hand up there, but and Mary made the point earlier on, which is that, you know, these tools aren't perfect and it might look like the stuff that's coming out of it is worthy of you know, or knows more than users shouldn't, but actually, you know, it's rarely going to be the case for a well-read student, a well-informed student or individual. And you know, while we can ask it to generate, we can ask it to clarify concepts for us or to kind of even to you know, polish ideas or suggest things, that should always be a starting point rather than an end point. And you know, that we should never just defer to the tool is kind of as huge as the data sets are that are trained on. You know, they don't have the critical faculties of an individual. And, you know, anything that you take from these, even if you're trying to clarify a concept, that should be something that you take away to try and understand with credible and relevant reading around it in order to be sure that, you know, if you're then using that or forming that as part of your writing or research, that you've checked it and critically assessed it. And I think you made that point earlier on about, you know, not deferring to the learning of these tools as well.
I mean, there are some great benefits to it as well in terms of research, but a lot of the issues are similar as to kind of plagiarism from the internet, making sure you are aware of academic integrity and producing your own work and definitely.
Yeah, and I mean, one of the things that I'm kind of conscious of where I am just now with it and is that because I'm interested in assessment and academic integrity, a lot of the conversations that I'm having with people, I do seem quite negative about it. I'm like, oh, you need to watch this, you need to change this. You know, we're talking about misuse or, you know, misconduct and, you know, vulnerabilities and assessment and stuff like that. And that's not what I want to be talking about because, as you say, John, there's going to be a huge sea change in what we could do, what, you know, how people can learn and how assessments can be designed and how things can be taught and how, you know, academics can use it in their teaching and all these things. The world of possibilities of it is massive, but when we come down to the issue of assessment and academic integrity, and that is ensuring that when students gain credit for a module, it's the student's learning that is being assessed and not a machine tool, then that conversation is the one that we're having just now because there's so many assessments which are potentially going to have to change. And so sometimes I need to remind myself and other people that I'm not, you know, the bad guy about Gen AI, and I'm not trying to scaremonger people, but and I'm actually really looking forward to having much more positive conversations about it once we've essentially got the assessment processes and approach to assessment more up to speed. I think that going forward, it's going to be a much more kind of positive discussion to be had with everybody and throughout the institution and beyond.
Well, it's been a very interesting discussion, and we may well have to come back to this topic on a future podcast, or we may even have to update this as the technology develops. Just a reminder, you can also book one-to-one appointments with any one of us in Academic Skills to talk about things like this. Simply book with us through the UWS Student app or Academic Skills website. Okay, thank you very much for coming, Kevin, Carly and Mary. We'd love your comments and feedback on the podcast. If you're thinking there's a topic that you would love us to discuss, or you have some advice to pass on to other students, then please email us at skills@uws.ac.uk. Thanks for listening.